In the early part of the 1990s, I made money on the side in a pretty interesting way. I'd dress up in a cow suit, and I would draw people wrong for money. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to William Hearn, Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been helping me get out of debt. Right after I got out of college, I got a rent-controlled apartment in Harvard Square, Massachusetts. It was a one-room affair, and there were shared bathrooms, but rent was doable for somebody who wasn't making a whole lot as a temp. But it did mean that I had to find other ways to make money on the side if I wanted to do anything other than survive. I thought about side jobs or getting involved in some sort of project that would pay off or maybe making something that people would pay for. And where I ended up settling was becoming a street caricaturist. I'd always been drawing. In fact, it was in college that I got the nickname Sketch, which I still use in various ways. And while I had never taken much of a shot at caricature, I figured that I could learn on the way and just figure it out, and if it didn't work out, get away from it. Looking back now, I'm very pleased with how careful I was about putting things together. I went down to the art supply store and I bought a single pad of paper, one that could rip the pages out in a straight edge, and I got my basic art drawing tools, a single thick marker and a single thin pen. That was about it. I did some practicing in my apartment, trying various faces I could see in magazines or on the television, and just tried to get my mind around how I would do this. So I could say I was self-taught, but it was worse than that. I was self-improvised. At the time, you could get a street performing license in Harvard Square by going down to Cambridge City Hall, filling out a form indicating what you were, and I indicated that I was doing art. This gave you a small, brightly colored license that would stay with you and which the police could then use to verify that you weren't a, I guess, counterfeit caricaturist. I ended up buying two folding chairs, and a small cart which I could put them on, and then using some pieces of cardboard, I made a sign. I guess I could have just left it at drawing people, but I felt like I needed a gimmick. Something that would catch the eye of tourists and visitors going through the square and make them want to come over and suddenly be drawn wrong. And so I dressed up in a cow suit. They were called caricatures, and on the signs I wrote this fun backstory that there were once massive herds of art cows throughout the country, but they had been hunted to extinction, and only a few existed in city squares, including myself. I wore the cow suit with a white hat that had a cow drawn on it, and I would sit on a chair and hope that people would hire me. Let's back up for a second and just talk a little bit about caricature as an art. It's basically a case of making a portrait of somebody, but trying to be, to various degrees, funny, mean, insightful, critical, maybe even devastating, and capturing in a simple line drawing a lot of what makes them them, perhaps to others only, or perhaps to themselves. In my case, the person who was being caricatured was paying for it, so there was a kind of incentive to make them look pretty good. Everybody who's ever done this sort of thing has a different methodology. What came out of my work was to draw the jawline and then the eyebrows. I just felt that if I didn't get those right, nothing else would come together, and there were a few times I would start over again. But generally, I would use a pencil and I would start to work out the form of their face, how they were either long or short, or how they had hair in one way or another. After that, I would try for the eyes, I would move then down to the mouth itself, and I would start to put together what looked pretty much like the person. And then I would put them, if they didn't have any requests, in a farm. Caricatures, after all. let me explain a little bit more about Harvard Square in the 1990s. It was a tourist-heavy square by the time I came to it. It had been other things before me. When I first went there in the 1980s, there were many different bookstores and very odd little shops. And, of course, over time, chains moved in and things that you thought were irreplaceable would close. But at the time that I was there, it was kind of on an in-between state. There were things that would attract families and people to the square, but it had not been quite shut down and scoured. This meant that on the weekends, there were easily a few thousand people who would move through the square, going from place to place, whether it was movie theaters or restaurants, or going to one of the events at Harvard itself, and then coming out onto the street to go to something else. Outside of all of these shops and places people could sit and walk was a thriving ecosystem of street performers. Because it was so cold in Massachusetts during the winter, you usually didn't see street performers any time before March, and you definitely didn't see them after November. There were probably, I would say, between a dozen and two dozen street performers who were regulars in Harvard Square. Some of them were jugglers or puppeteers. A lot of them were musicians with a guitar and some sort of place to put all the money. A few of us did art, and there were even a cappella groups and magicians. All of them vying for your attention. I didn't hang out socially with any of the other street performers, so everything I'm telling you is from the point of view of a cow suit wearing outsider. There was a little bit of drama involving spaces. There were spaces that were really good in Harvard Square, and then there were other ones that just didn't have as much traffic. And because there was various places that had light and various places that had no light, people would vie to have an area where a light from the store would shine or where they could get under a street lamp. And so there was a little bit of jockeying for that position. There was an undisputed king of the street performers. He was an acrobat juggler. I never learned his name. And he had this whole act around juggling and balancing balls and going on a rope. And it was a hit. He could pull 100 to 150 people aside out of whatever they were doing and cause this massive crowd. And then he would do things to make that crowd make noise so that even more people joined the crowd. And when his act was done, he knew how to time it to send the bucket around to ensure people threw money in. I don't know how much money he was making, but it was a pretty good living. To have his act work, he needed to tie a rope between one of two locations. There was going to be no other performer welcome, and you probably didn't want to be too close anyway when those inevitable crowds came. For the vast majority of my time as a street performer, there was one particular location I liked. It was just underneath the light of a neon sign of a store that closed at 8 o'clock, and because of the arrangement of a staircase and a wall, I could keep track of all of my stuff. I'd set up my two chairs looking at each other. I had printed out with a laser printer the word caricatures, and I put that on the window, and then I went into a mode not unlike a carnival barker, walking back and forth with my pad and imploring people that this was something they wanted to do. I charged $5 for a portrait, $10 for two people, $20 for three. So I have this beautiful memory in my early 20s of being in this loud, shouting, weird nighttime square with people doing all the crazy things they do at night, while I, dressed as a cow, had these strange conversations with folks who I only spent 5 or 6 minutes with, quickly drawing them wrong, amplifying this aspect or diminishing it based on how I read them. And it got me a lot of training in how people talk. These weren't full-blown interviews, but it helped to find out what their feelings were about being drawn. I mean, some people were sat down by a loved one who was paying for it, and so I could tell that they weren't totally on board. Other people implored me, please do what I could to mess them up, make them as weird as possible, go way off the rails. And I would have to make a secondary judgment of how off the rails did they want it. And let me tell you, there's something about being forced to draw whoever has decided to sit in front of you and to do it in a way that they would not feel cheated for giving you $5 that accelerated my talent with this to no end. In the beginning, I was a shaky hand that did very careful pencil drawings to make sure I was going to get every inked line right. By the end of this, I was almost never using the pencil, maybe occasionally using it to figure one or two things out, but then blasting into a nest of ink so that I could get on to the next person and get as many people done for that night. The more people I moved through, the more money I would have on the side to be able to afford to go out to eat or to buy some records or go to a movie. So it became pretty serious business. There's a quote by the playwright Neil Simon that says essentially that the first $100 you make is the most important, and everything after that, it's just gravy. And in some ways, he was right. Once I started to bring in money this way, based entirely off of my talent, off of my ability to sell my idea and to work with people one after another, that money was the most precious and meaningful money of any, I frankly think, I've ever made. I've earned salaries and I've been paid salaries, but this was a small weekly pile that I built bill after crumpled, dirty bill until I could go out and reward myself with things I wanted but couldn't otherwise justify on a temp's salary paying for my own way. I miss the idea of it, if not the actuality. You meet a lot of strange people at night dressed in a cow suit. In general, you'll be surprised to hear, not that many people messed with me. I mean, I wasn't like an amusement park character who had to talk to you. If somebody was weird at me while I was out on the sidewalk, I could just move away from them or step over or ensure that a few people were between us. I mean, I didn't have to be anywhere. I guess if somebody had been really harassing me, I could have just packed up and gone somewhere else or gone home. The only people who really assaulted me in any way would be drunken dads out with their families who would be completely drawn to my udder and would pull on it trying to milk me. And on the whole, folks were pretty cool about this weirdo jumping around. Kids liked it. Parents liked that they could get people to sit down and not go anywhere for a few minutes and they could relax. And the whole thing was pretty fun. My first summer doing this, I probably made $100 to $200 in a weekend. Sometimes it would be as low as $50, and occasionally it would be more because somebody would feel unusually generous and give me $20 instead of $5. That money made all the difference. In my second year, I upgraded a little bit. I fixed up my cart so that it was easier to get around. And I even upgraded the cow suit because going out on the street week after week was getting it a bit dirty. And that second year, well, that got a little weird. First of all, I'd been there long enough that people recognized me. This meant that they were coming up to me because they had seen me last year, or they had seen me around and they wanted to have it done finally. I didn't always go out every weekend, certainly never when it rained or if it was too crowded or if I needed to go somewhere. But people would seek me out and ask me to do a drawing for them. That was new. It's almost weird how this is gone now, but everything I did then was before the era of making a website for everything. So if people wanted to find me, they literally had to find me. And I, for my own part, had started to notice some of the quirks of some of the regulars. There was one guy who I don't even know what his deal was. He was part of the people who would be there during the summer and disappear in the winter. I heard a lot of people went to New Orleans during the winter to be able to still perform on the streets. But this guitarist, I'll always remember how burnt he was, how completely not there he was. I don't know what he was on, how he was living, but all I'll remember was that he only had three songs. He could perform three songs, and one of them was No Woman, No Cry, which he would extend out to something like probably 10 or 15 minutes. So he had a 20-minute act that consisted of three songs that he would play, I'm not kidding, over and over from noon till midnight when they kicked us out of the square. Just talking about it, I can still remember him slowly moving through the No Woman, No Cry refrain, barely registering anything going on. And it quickly became one of the aspects of finding a spot in the square to be as far away from this guy as possible, because you would literally go crazy. But, and perhaps this episode functions as nothing but a way to tell you about this guy, there was one person who rose above all the other performers as the weirdest of the weird, and his name was the Rami Salami. So the Rami Salami's gig was that he was a clown, and he would do balloon animals. Pretty basic stuff, right? Funny guy, says things to the kids, quickly wraps up a balloon in the shape of a dog or a parrot or anything else, maybe makes a little hat out of it, puts it on the kid's head, gets a few bucks, goes on. But I wasn't somebody who was walking by this funny clown and then getting my balloon hat and then going onward. I was somebody who would be next to the Rami Salami. He really liked me and hung out with me when he was in the same square working with me. Here's the thing. Rami Salami was a raging clown with a level of cynicism that your imagination could not call forth. The amount of times he would turn to me and tell me that he had to go off to get a drink, and he would disappear for 40 minutes while I was running my booth and his booth was saying back in five, and he'd come back from the bar slightly toasted in his rainbow suspenders and his huge pants and strange shoes, and he would come back from the bar and then just keep doing balloon animals. But it gets stranger. When he wasn't a street performing clown, the Rami Salami was a documentary filmmaker. He was always applying for grants to go to the Middle East to do various films, and he apparently was doing these lectures on the subjects he was doing documentaries on, films primarily about nomadic peoples that he would travel along with for a month and then get lots of footage and make a movie about. That was his day job. But who's going to turn down a good clowning gig? So it was me and the Rami Salami, the oddest of couples, in the middle of a square in the early 1990s, which, if I could switch to monochrome, take a single picture, probably captures everything I want to remember about that time in my life. So I'm not sure what lessons one could learn from all this. I was very proud of the fact that I knew I needed to make some extra money, and I came up with this very odd, talent-driven idea that let me set my own hours and just depended on me being brave night after night, not knowing what kind of weird tourists or drug addicts or strange folks were going to wander into my life, and then using that to be able to give myself a little extra every month. And along the way, picking up some service job experience and being able to listen to what people want, try to figure out what they really want, and then give it to them. I did this hundreds of times. There's probably 500 signed drawings by me around the country or in the trash of people who stopped off in Harvard Square sometime in the early 1990s and had a guy in a cow suit draw for them. It's not the greatest of legacies, but what it did for me as a person and my self-confidence and my reaching out and seeing how life was out in the world, well, that's completely priceless. This has been Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, James Bakoyanu, Adam Green, and the hundreds of supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been helping me get out of debt. So two other things about my life as a caricaturist. It came crashing to an end when the city of Cambridge decided to change the rules of what a street performer was. Basically, there were people who were doing little acts and gigs, playing music or doing juggling, and those folks were performing. Then there were people who were literally just dragging in stores, that is to say, jewelry and records, and setting up basically a tag sale on the sidewalk at night after the shops had closed. And I guess they were trying to stop that from happening, and in doing so, a range of street performers who literally sold a product were declared vendors, and we had to apply for vendors' licenses. Vendors' licenses were incredibly expensive. When I looked into doing it, it was something like $500 just to pay for the hearing for the license. And so I had to wrap things up. I ended up actually appearing in a newspaper about this whole thing, and it was an article called Cow Told to Go Home. I'm sure I have it. I'll get it up there. And it's me in my cow suit in Harvard Square, holding a little American flag because my time for doing this was over. And I'm not going to let you go without my favorite Rami Salami story. There I was in Harvard Square with my setup and the Rami setup next to me. And we had it set up so that we weren't seeing each other. I was on one side and he was on another, and we were facing different crowds. Wasn't anything personal. It just worked out in that particular part of the square that we weren't seeing each other. So I couldn't always tell where his attention was. And two kids came in and sat down for their caricature. We're talking as we do, and I'm drawing them just fine. And I ask what they're in town for. And they explain to me that they're in a convention to celebrate Jesus. To their credit, they didn't try to sell me on Jesus. They just mentioned what they were there for and how much fun they were having, and just kind of touched on the fact that there were a bunch of them around there and that it was all really fun, and that their Jesus convention happened to have nothing going on Saturday afternoon, so they thought they would walk around and they would see what was up. So I felt like this was something the Rami would make fun of. But there wasn't a peep out of this guy. I thought he had maybe either gotten distracted, or he wasn't listening, or maybe he'd fallen asleep. And so I finished up, gave those sweet kids their drawing, and they went off into the crowd. And so, from the other side of my booth, the Rami turns around and hands me a balloon crucifix. I can't overstate what a work of art this was. It was multiple balloons all worked together with a small teddy bear as the balloon animal tied to a crucifix that was a bright and beautiful blue, and he handed it to me without a word and then went back to his stuff. This is a strange, weird world where a guy in a cow suit can be handed a balloon crucifix from an alcoholic clown.